This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. And the piece you just heard was produced by Lila Day, who you'll hear more from now in conversation with Belinda Reyes. She's director of the Cesar E. Chavez Institute at San Francisco State University. The organization researches the impact of social oppression on communities of color. It's one of many offering assistance to Latino communities.
What are the chances of someone being able to apply and receive asylum?
It's a very difficult experience for anybody to migrate. They are not doing it because they want to explore. It is really need what causes them to move, or a desire to change, or an oppressive environment, or and particularly where she's coming from. People are escaping. They have a case for asylum, but we are not thinking about them as refugees. We're thinking about case by case, and everybody has to prove their case. There's not even a temporary protector status anymore. I mean, even though we know that the problem is people escaping crime and difficulties, we still try to think about them as economic migrants. Others that have confronted the same crime, the same war, but because he was, a protected government, maybe by the United States, they never became refugees.
So that's the one thing that could determine if they're a refugee or...
whether they fear for their life. But the refugee decision that then anybody from that particular population qualifies for, like the Syrians right now, then sets up a different process. Then everybody within that category of people qualifies. That what we do with Central Americans and Haitians and others is no, we don't qualify. They are not refugees, even though the situation is very similar. We analyze case by case asylum cases. So is this person have enough proof to show that they have been persecuted and they fear for their life? And sometimes it's very hard to have that evidence. It's your word against the person that is asking you the questions.
You've worked a lot around immigration policy. What are some of the main things you think that that the public should be noticing and focusing right now when it comes to immigration reform?
Yeah. We think of militarizing and a response that is to arm Mexico, to arm Cuba, to arm Colombia. And often that gets used to oppress in many of these countries. And it creates more havoc than it is. So I think also moving away from that idea of militarizing to perhaps programs that address issues of poverty and address other issues, not just give a bunch of weapons to a new government that is oppressive, to address issues of drugs. And it's an issue of poverty, it's an issue of opportunity. So building infrastructure in El Salvador, addressing issues of poverty in El Salvador probably will have a much better consequence than, again, a military approach of bringing more soldiers to address the issue of drugs.
One thing that we just heard in the story about Concepcion was her very, very difficult journey through Mexico, but mm-hmm. partly because of the way she was treated because she's from El mm-hmm. Salvador.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about this experience that she had where she felt mistreated?
Yeah. It's very, very rough and very difficult. But I think there is, I just came back from Puerto Rico, that's where I'm from. And in Puerto Rico is the Dominican, the one that is the immigrant and the one that is talked about as they are bringing the crime, they're doing all the bad things. You hear Trump talking about it's the Mexicans in here. In the Dominican Republic, it's the Haitians. Now there is always that battle reception to the other, who often looks very similar to us.
So in the story about Concepcion, is she considered the other being from El Salvador and Mexico?
Yeah, definitely. And even within the Latino community in the United States, there are some differences and the way the community speaks of each other, of the different subgroups, the Mexicanos and the Salvadorians. But at the end, the migration experience in here unites these very different countries and peoples. But they do go through very difficult times. When we were doing our study about borders was over 10 years ago, and people that, they're not the poorest of the poor, but they have some basic resources, but they cannot afford $4,000 for a trip. That was what they were paying 10, 12 years ago. It's much more money right now. And people are actually owing the money, so they might pay part of it, but once they're delivered, they continue to pay. They're even charged interest for this. So when once people are in here, particularly the undocumented immigrant is what I'm talking about, once they're in here, they not only have to send money home and be able to buy the groceries and pay the rent, they have to pay for what it cost them, that it could have been $10,000 with interest to be able to remain in here, the travel cost.
And what about people that make it here without paying that? Are they put in worse situations when they don't have someone that they're paying to help them get here?
It's very difficult to do it on your own. I mean, I think you pretty much have to hire a coyote or a smuggler to come, and the prices are outrageous. So you either pay it ahead of time, or you, and if you have somebody in your family that could do that, or you owe that amount of money, and then you have to continue to pay. So you are kind of like, it's indentured servitude sometimes. They get in situations that they have to work for the person that brought them in here. And, you know, in some conditions of slavery sometimes on some of the people that are getting in here. And again, I mean, many of them are escaping situations that force them to leave. And they face really difficult situations once they get here.